Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
Like, you just see 100,000,
600,000 deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, This man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
As the sun rises over the Arabian Sea on the coastal city of Mumbai, the day is beginning for the 10 million people who live in the crowded city slums. The Hegre family lives in the Kalaba slum, in this tiny 10 by 10 foot concrete room. The 60 neighbors who live on their small lane all share just four toilets and this small room for bathing. The Hegre's three daughters, six-year-old twins, Anisha and Tanisha, and 12-year-old big sister, Anchal, are up early getting ready for school. Their mother, Parvati, helps get the girls and her husband, Rajesh, out the door. After their dad drops the girls off at school, he heads to his job at a security company where he earns about $200 a month. Then Parvati cleans their house, makes lunch and dinner, and performs her daily prayers. Then the most important task of all, she collects the next day's supply of water. In this slum, water only flows during a two-hour window, just once a day.
I felt that you can't come to India without experiencing what we've all heard about the poverty. But I also wanted to frame that story in such a way that it represented the truth of the people.
Anchal,
yeah.
I think this is so wonderful that you're giving me the tour guide. You speak English so well.
So it wasn't just people living in slums, eating out of the trash piles and not having a place to defecate and all the stuff that comes with being extremely, extremely poor. But for me, every story is about the heart of the people. And so what is the heart of the people? How do you find a story that shows somebody who is living a life of sparseness, of poverty, but also still has the heart
Thank you. Namaste. Namaste. Great. All right, we're going here?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Namaste. Showers of blessings. Oh, thank you. Namaste. Thank you, family. Thank you. I have to tell you, when I stepped in the door, I was thinking, okay, where is the house? Okay, where's the rest of the house? And then I realized I was already in it.
All right, everybody quiet, please.
Okay, I wanted to start off by just saying thank you for allowing me into your home. How long have you lived in this home?
Living for 33 years.
33
years?
Yeah. You don't look 33 years old, but you've lived here your whole life?
Yeah.
So your family was here before?
Yeah, my family is also here.
In this space?
Yes, this space.
And this is the entire space. The entire family lives and sleeps in this space.
Mm.
One, two, three, four, five of you sleep in this room.
In this room.
You eat in this room.
Yeah.
You play in this room.
Mm.
You share family time together in this room, which is from here to here. The five of you.
Yeah.
Okay. This may be an obvious question, and I don't mean to be offensive, but does it ever feel crowded? Does it feel crowded?
No.
It doesn't feel crowded.
No, we just manage it. We have a habit of sleeping because we don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything?
Yeah.
And how do you do it? I mean, how do you physically do it?
I sleep in that corner.
Where I am right now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she sleeps over here, my mother over here. My another sister over here and my father over here.
Okay. All right. Would you say this is this a hard life? Is it difficult?
Yes, ma'am.
It is.
Yeah.
And tell me what's the most difficult thing about it.
Difficult work, tell us that my mother work, my family will not do it.
Means he has a problem that he cannot manage the... His salary not for four people.
For the people.
Yeah.
This was an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah.
Was it an arranged marriage?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it turn into a love marriage?
After 1 year, I love it.
After 1 year, you love it. Is he a good partner?
Yeah, very good partner.
Good partner.
Yeah.
Do you have a good life with him?
Yeah, very nice life.
Okay, we're here on a Monday, and it's the podcast is titled B.I.Y. Shacks. Originally, because we've been on for a little bit over 10 years now, 10 consecutive years. Originally, the name of the podcast live stream was It's My House. But we've evolved, and our new growth name is B.I.Y. Shacks. B.I.Y. Shacks. What does that stand for? Build It Yourself Shacks, or Build It Yourself Housing. Because after my research, 24%, knocking at the door of 25%, a quarter of us, the people that live on planet Earth, build their own homes debt-free, most of those in developing countries. And due to the fact that they don't have mortgages on them, bank loan mortgages on them, or back mortgages on them, the powers that be call a lot of these places shacks. But some of these shacks are chic and pimped out. So anyway, that's our name here. B.I.Y. Shacks. And today I'm introducing a name I came up with not even a week ago, over the weekend. And it's a topic that I think needs to be taught in school, but I don't think you're going to find it in any grade school, high school, middle school. At no college university, and it's called, so we're winging it. It's called, matter of fact, we're going to do a book out of this. So this, we do these podcasts as a script our way through it. Generational Wealth Mathematics. Generational Wealth Mathematics, where we're going to be dealing with real life, what I call real life math problems that can affect you now, that affect you right now and can affect you and your family for generations to come. And we're going to put out 11 terms, excuse me, 10 terms, but I got 11th idea I want to put out there. We're going to give you some mathematical terms that have always been around. They're part of the fundamentals, but most people just don't have these words or they don't stand out in their vocabulary. So there's 10 of them we're going to put out there during this live stream. And then, Reva, I'm going to open up your mic momentarily. But let me start off with this. Assets and liabilities. Assets and liabilities, when it comes to generational wealth mathematics, it's really a state of mind. It's like beauty. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Somebody that you might looks ugly, I might see as beautiful. Some people absolutely love, let's say, since I'm a male, some people like, for some people, you like short people that are 4'11" and smaller in stature, and they might weigh 90 pounds or 100 pounds. For you, they might be hot people. They might be turn-ons for you sexually and all that. Other people, at the other end of the spectrum, you might like people that are 6 feet tall and weigh 500 or 600 pounds. And, of course, we got all type of people, shape, sizes, all in between. Some people like short people. Some people like tall people. Some like, you know, some people like in between. Everybody has preferences. So whatever is an asset or a liability is really in the mind of the beholder. And let me throw in another word, opportunity. Whatever is an asset, a liability, and an opportunity is all in the mind of the beholder. Now, let's put this in terms of housing. You know, some people like to go looking for houses that are boarded up and in disrepair. Now, that's a house. That house might be a liability to somebody else. They maybe didn't have the money for whatever reason. It's a liability. However, there are other people out there that look at that exact same house and see it as an opportunity to turn that dilapidated house or car, because some people like cars, and turn it into an asset. So this is all part of it. This is the mindset that you need to have. You know, assets, liabilities, and opportunities are all in the mind of the beholder. So I'm going to play a little short clip here which this guy, Lamar Alexander, he built his own house in 2 weeks, 14 days, for a total of $5,000. I'm going to play this because this is going to be the basis of these 10 mathematical definitions I'm going to give you. You can look them up all online, and we're going to take that to, because what we're going to talk about today is how you can build some generational wealth. And the figure that we're going to put out there is $1 million. I want you to see clear on how you or anybody that you know can earn $1 million by following the steps that we have laid out with our mathematics that we're going to put out today.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no...
I'm gonna say some shit to y'all that...
Okay. All right. Let's get into it. Generational wealth mathematics. Now, I played that audio because I wanted you to hear what he spent. Now, I said prior to me playing him that today and all of this week, we're going to show you how to make $1 million. All right, this is part of the generational wealth mathematics. Some of you might think that I don't know how I can do that. Well, once again, as I stated earlier in this podcast, that assets, liabilities, and opportunities are all states of mind. So what we're doing is I'm breaking down that $1 million into component parts. And we're going to use mathematics to help explain that. All right, so one of the figures I want you to have in your mind is, number one, this man by himself built a house powered by solar electric in 2 weeks, 14 days, by himself. That's a total of $5,000 out of pocket. Actually, a little bit less than that, but we're going to round it up to $5,000 even. Now, if he did that, or if you did that, now, if he can build a cabin or a home for $5,000, so can you. Now, if he did that 200 more times, $5,000 times 200 is $1 million. All right, $5,000 times 200 is $1 million. But think if he had some help.
Say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass, high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do?
He said, we finna fix this house. I said, what kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, these my friends. The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Whew. It was an abandoned fucking house. And it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb. Many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together. Wow. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning.
Okay. Now, let's go to some mathematic dictionaries. On Friday, I mentioned that everybody should get a copy of Barron's, that's spelled B-A-R-R-O-N-S, Barron's Dictionary of Mathematics. Barron's Dictionary of Mathematics. If you have a current financial situation, eviction, foreclosure, you need money, you got a loan to pay off, what have you, any kind of personal finance problems, more than likely the answer to your problems is right in that book. Now, Barron's is just one mathematics dictionary. There are other mathematics dictionaries that are on the market, but that's one I recommend. It doesn't cost that much. And it's going to give you at least 800 terms that you don't know about that you need to learn. I'm going to put out 8 to 10 of them this morning. All right. Now, we stated just a few moments ago that in order to, for Lamar or you, if you wanted to earn $1 million in a year, gross debt, that you can do exactly what he did, build houses. He built his house solo in 2 weeks for $5,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the solar electric system, so $5,000. All right, now 2 weeks it took him to do that. So in a course of a year, let's say realistically, he can do one a month. You know, that's 12 in a whole year. Now he lives in one, and then he builds 11, and he just builds and sells. So, that, you know, that's over $50,000-$60,000 a year that he can make just by building and selling solo. All right, now. Let's get to some definitions. The first definition I want you to write down is event. E-V-E-N-T, event. But the definition of event in terms of mathematics. And what I'm reading here, what is the meaning of an event in mathematics? It is an outcome or set of outcomes that you want to have. So building a house that costs you no more than $5,000 to build is an event. If you do it 200 times in a course of a year or a course of 6 months or a course of a whatever time value do you want on there, that series of events, if you do that event, if you repeat it, wash, rinse, repeat, 200 times, you've grossed $1 million. Event is a mathematical term. Once again, get a mathematics dictionary. Once again, I recommend Barron's Dictionary of Mathematics. Then there are different math distinctions. Now, probability. Let's look up the word probability. And let's see. All right, probability. Okay. A probability, and once again, we're giving basic fundamental. As a matter of fact, let's give it a. Let's say you're facing, you owe property tax money. If you don't pay them, you can lose your property to tax foreclosure or any type of foreclosure. All right. So I've given you the formula. Let's say you need $100,000. You need to gross $100,000 and pay those back taxes off. Okay. Now, I've given you a formula, and we'll get to that definition shortly. We've given you, as a matter of fact, let's do a formula right now before I give you the definition. The formula that you've heard two that I play today. One formula is Lamar Alexander by himself in 14 days, he built his own $5,000 cabin. That's a formula. One person and doing 14 days of work, that's one formula. Another formula that we played today is one guy invites friends over, and the friends come over in 9 trucks. All right, now more than likely, there were 2 people on average in each one of those trucks. So 9 trucks times 2 people per truck, that's 18 people, including the guy who made the phone call, that's 19 people. 19 people within 6 to 8 hours, let's say 8 hours, take a house and make it look brand new. Remember what I said at the beginning of this. Assets, liabilities, and opportunities are all in the mind of the beholder. The people that house was, the neighborhood that house was in, the neighbors and the people that lived in that neighborhood, that lived by that neighborhood, that saw that house every day for years, looked at that house as a liability. Any one of them could have bought the house. Collectively, they could have bought the house. All the people that have been in that neighborhood for years could have purchased that house and fixed it up just like these people did. But they saw it as a liability. Once again, assets, liabilities, and opportunities are all in the mind of the beholder. So one person, now let's look at the formula. 19 people in 8 hours renovate an entire house, make it look brand new. That's a formula. That same 18 or 19 people more than likely can build that cabin that Lamar built by himself in 14 days. They can probably build that in a matter of hours, less than 12 hours. That's a formula also. Once again, and that goes to events. Now, here's the next word I want to put out there. This is a mathematical term. That's why I'm telling you to get a math dictionary. The probability. If you want to earn $1 million, let's say within a year, okay, what's the probability? Well, if you break it down, that's why I'm playing these little simple Simon audios for you. Okay. What's the probability? See, the guy who had the house renovated in a matter of hours, he increased the probability. And matter of fact, again, let me give you the definition of probability according to the Mathematics Dictionary. A probability is the number that reflects the chance or likelihood that a particular event will occur. All right, so Lamar built his house in 14 days. Lamar didn't get sick or injured. All right. However, the guy who renovated his house in a matter of hours with the help of 18 friends that came in 9 pickup trucks, he increased his probability of success because he had more people involved. So some of you that might be facing a big tax bill, or you might be facing foreclosure, you saying to yourself, I don't know how I'm going to get the money, and you don't see any probability of it happening at all because, number one, if you don't do anything, the probability will be nil. But if you organize a team and you organize, sit down and write down the events that need to happen, your probability goes way up for success. I already given you formula. And as a matter of fact, let's be consistent with this formula definition. Formula. Okay. A formula can be defined as a group of statistical symbols. You know what? The best way I can remember a recipe. One person in 14 days is a formula or a recipe. 9 people in 8 hours with the proper amount of materials and tools is a recipe. I'm going to simplify it that way. Okay, next definition, logic. All right, first thing before I even get to logic, outcomes is what you want. In other words, you know if you build a $5,000 house, you know if if you do that and get that outcome, if you do that 200 times, your outcome will be $1 million. Value. We're basing it on the $5,000, like the Lamar Alexander, $2,000 to build the cabin, $3,000 for the cent, so that we had to put a value on it. Once again, that value of $5,000, watch rinse repeated or multiplied by 200 in the course of a year. That's one a day, basically. Taking Sundays off, even taking weekends off, you'll reach it. Matter of fact, you can probably reach that goal in 6 months if you're at it once a day. Once a day, 6 days a week. All right. Now, let's two more definitions. Let's go with logic. Okay. Because a lot of people, when they get these notices that you owe this amount of money or there's a court date, you get emotional and you don't get logical at all. So logic is a mathematical term. And, okay, what's the definition of logic in simple terms? And let's see what they have here. Logic is a system of reasoning and aims to draw valid conclusions based on the given information. So in order to, if let's say, once again, the goal is to earn, you got to earn $100,000 to pay these back taxes. So we already know, mathematically speaking, that if we get a team of 18 people or so, we can build a $5,000 cabin or small house within 8 hours. We know that. That's part of the formula. All right. Now, in order to, because you owe let's say owe $100,000. Okay. in order to pay that off, you've got to build 20 of those. You got to build 20 of them. So that's thinking logically. You know, you won't be panicked or nothing like that. All right, the last last definition I'm going to put in there for today is truth table. All right, so once again, we're going with out of the Dictionary of Mathematics. As I stated last week, a lot of you who might be facing foreclosure, eviction, debt collection, what have you, you don't have a legal problem. You have a math problem. And lawyers are not trained mathematicians. Matter of fact, a lot of your problems can be solved by people with a third grade education, I mean mathematical background. All right, so truth table, and that'll be our last definition for today. A truth table is a breakdown of all the possible truth values by a logical. I brought up last Friday this example. This is very fundamental. That there are only 9 digits. I mean, fundamental digits. There's 0, which is a digit, to 9. 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's it. 0 through 9, those are the digits, the fundamental digits, the root digits. There are billions of telephone numbers that are made up out of those 9 digits. Excuse me, out of those digits. 10 digits, actually. 0 through 9. Look at your phone number. Your phone number doesn't even have all the digits that are from 0 to 9, more than likely. There are 26 letters out of the English alphabet. That's 26. Yet there are millions of books containing billions of sentences at the Library of Congress alone in 470 different languages, all stemming from just 26 letters of the alphabet. Now, different languages have some alphabet, like Cyrillic and Russian and Ukrainian, they have more letters in their alphabet. Hindi has more letters in their alphabet. But in the English, in the, you know, American language, we just have 26 letters, A through Z. Yet there are millions of books, billions of sentences made up from those 26 letters. So the answer that you need to clear up your debt, whatever amount of money that might be, can be found. It's just you just have to be resourceful, or team up with somebody who is resourceful, because you can get what you need to get. Now, once again, if you need $1 million, just work on perfecting how you can do $5,000, and then whatever you did to get that $5,000, do it 200 more times. Okay, let's see. 773, your mic is open.
Grand Rising, buenos dias.
Buenos dias, and sorry I had that long rant.
Well, you know, I was texting a few friends and sharing the podcast link to let them know you want to take notes. So you are an educator, former teacher, so people just need to know. We need to change our mindset, like you said, even with simply just listening in on information stations like what we're doing today, just begin to take notes. Just change your mindset about, okay, well, it may not necessarily seem like something that I want to listen to, but then they begin to hear information that's useful for life. So everything is, you know, there's this expression that says, thank you, I see your text, that says, what's that expression that goes, all work and no play, or all, how does that expression go?
Yeah, all no work, what make, I forgot. I know what you're talking about.
So the audience, I'm sure, knows what we're referring to. When it comes down to, I have to tell my students, you know, we have to take care of our business first. So when we're listening in and going about our day, something my dad told me when I was younger, he said, you always learn something new every day. And I've heard other people say that, but for my dad to tell me that, and I already knew he was smart, you know, I thought he was like an Einstein or smarter than Einstein. Not just because he was my dad. Of course, you know, he was a three-area tradesman. He was an inventor. But the thing is, you certainly want to listen in. You're always getting information, something new, something that you may not have thought about, something that you'll see in a different light. So for us both as educators, we know the value of what you're sharing in what you call a rant. So it's generally, it's not a rant. So I just want to encourage you that the audio that you played are informational. So there's so much in those audios, and you have more. So I just will encourage people to the audience to continue to listen in and share with others, because you know that you've heard some valuable information. And so we are focused on teaching. It's in our hearts, it's in our compassion to share. There is to build and to work on some of the projects. There is cost associated with it. For instance, the tiny solar mobile cabin. So as you said, with using, tapping into resources, figure out who, just like that Mexican family, who can help you to save money. Those nine guys were his friends that helped to build that house. And I understand the heart of the young man who was in tears about why, you know, it seems that a lot of times our culture in the African-American community, we don't seem to be team players or work together. But that is a very moving story. He was passionate. And I encourage people to not use the word can't. He said, I don't know why we can't, because a lot of people do that. It's something that I think becomes second nature. We say, we can't do this. Even when I teach Spanish, it's like, I can't roll my R's. Well, there's a technique to it. You know, there's different things, different ways to do it. And people learn differently, different learning styles. And you as an educator, you know that. So we're going to help people across the globe, because we are talking about nationally right now, internationally. So we're going to help people learn how to build generational wealth. Some people may want to just build a house so that they would never be homeless again. And so the tiny mobile cabins is one thing, but we want to start with some foundational things such as the generational mathematics.
Right. I just got back in. I got kicked out twice.
Oh, wow. So my audio was still going, though, huh?
Yeah, your audio still going. Yeah, people can hear you, but okay. I got kicked out twice.
So, yeah, when I was on WKKC, the college radio station, they called it dead air. So you want to, like, 2 seconds or longer, something like that. It's dead air. So, yeah, glad you're back. And I'm excited, you know, once again, because, you know, I was full-time in the classroom and to be back. You know, I like moving around, so this is what we'll do. I'm actually about to step out, run some errands, and, you know, for our professionals, I just want to, maybe we should just schedule for a certain time for them to be able to speak, and we do our treatment, as I learned in college. for like the Oprah Winfrey Show and things like that. My show for my radio and TV broadcasting program is going to be called Synergetics. And so we had to put together a treatment for our show for that radio. And it was taught by Daryl Dennard, a Double D Productions. Yeah, so he was Jean Sparrow from our local radio station. She was one of the instructors at Kennedy King at the time. So the thing is there's, you know, the format, you know, so the timing of the and we'll talk offline about that, and I can share some things with you. So I'm excited because I'm still taking notes, and I've heard those audios multiple times.
Well, now, let me ask you this. Now, the example I gave, because I tried to use a real generalized a person that needed, let's say, $100,000 to pay property tax. But I broke it down to, okay, in order to raise that kind of money, is you build these little, like Lamar, use a combination of building $5,000 cabins or tiny houses, but with the help of a few friends. Like the guy who, you know, did the, that, you know, did the, you know, the Nine Friends with the pickup truck.
Okay, okay.
How do you feel about that example?
Yeah,
because if you did that, let's say you needed $100,000, $100,000, I think we figured that out already, divided by 5,000, you need to do that 20 times. So in other words, if you did that once a week, let's say on Saturdays, you got together on Saturdays and did it for 20 consecutive Saturdays in a row, you would have generated enough cash to pay off that $100,000 in back taxes.
Yeah, so that's mathematics.
I think that's realistic, but that's, yeah. Because if you're trying to come up with, a lot of people get intimidated because they just don't know the fundamentals, all right? Events, what events need to take place, what's the probability of these happening, what kind of outcomes do you want? All this stuff can be reduced down to writing.
Yeah.
And then you just follow the plan.
We talked about, you know, my situation when my family was a part of that foreclosure crisis, and I had a predatory mortgage, and it's just really hard to think when you're under stress. It's hard to think straight. So some people may even seek counseling. They have, like, housing counseling and things like that, but at the same time, if you're connected to a church, or if you just want to even stop into a church, when you're experiencing a crisis, just know that it's normal at times, depending on the pressure. It's hard to think straight sometimes. So you don't necessarily know what resources you have for your event or situation, the crisis event. However, just seek at least someone to talk to, because we've always like back in the day, we had mentors and things like that. But you want to make sure that you stay connected. A lot of times our generations are disconnected from, back in the day, many of us had mentors. So you want to have someone that you could talk to, or an organization. Be careful with some organizations, too, because you may think, like if it's a certain housing association, some of these, in my experience, some of these organizations actually encourage you to sell your house. But see, what my situation is, I want to share this real quick, Brother L.A. My home, when I started getting my letters, it was only 2 months. I was 2 months behind in between work. I've always had, like, small businesses, childcare, something I was doing. However, I've fallen behind, so I was trying to play catch-up. However, you really don't go into foreclosure, and just any professionals that are out there, if you correct me if I'm wrong as far as the terminology, I know that what I recall when I was reading, because I read everything, I read the fine print, I was only 2 months behind. So I go into this one agency, And I wasn't, you know, I'm just 2 months behind. So by the time they began to work on my, you know, I sat there for an appointment. By the time they began to work on my paperwork, which actually they didn't. I thought they were going to work on my paperwork. I read something that said I needed to be, I would, by the third month, it would go into foreclosure. So there is, we talked about time in this podcast. We talked about the timing. So we certainly want to get those terminologies down. So if you want to just repeat those terms, those mathematical or financial economical terms, just to repeat them for anyone who missed them, you know, for the audience. So just to be educated.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Right.
Yeah, so we can be equipped with resources, the terminology as well.
Right. Well, I put 10 of them. Well, first thing, I'm going to put 10, but the 11th term, which I'll start off with this, is what is an asset, a liability, and an opportunity? It's really like beauty. It's all in the mind of the beholder.
Yeah.
So you can take a, what some people perceive as a liability can actually be converted into an asset. It's all in how you look at it. All right, now, mathematical terms, once again, I'm going to recommend you can go online and you can order or from your local bookstore or online bookstore like Kindle or Amazon a dictionary of mathematics, dictionary for mathematics. And one I highly recommend is Barron's, B-A-R-R-O-N-S, Barron's Dictionary of Mathematics. And I'm going to name about seven or eight of those terms right now. An event is a mathematical term. This is a mathematical term, for instance. So is outcome. All right, let's say you, once again, you need $100,000. All right, like when you get a paycheck. When you receive that paycheck, by you receiving that paycheck, no matter how you receive it, through the mail, through the bank account, Cash App, what have you, PayPal, when you receive that money, that is a event. It's also an outcome. All right. So if you need $100,000 to pay those back taxes or whatever kind of bill that you owe, if you need $100,000, okay, that's what events need to happen in order for you to get the outcome of $100,000. So the event that we use during this particular podcast today, one of the events is, okay, building a small off-the-grid solar cabin that costs $5,000 total. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the solar electric system. That's a total of $5,000. Now, we know there's another term, probability. What's the probability of that happening? All right. We know that if we organize a team and we have a team of, let's say, 12, 15, 19 people, we know that we can make that event happen of building that $5,000 cabin within a matter of hours, let's say 8 hours. All right? That's another mathematical term, formula. It can be 1 to 14 days or 19 to 8 hours. We have another one that we use, 781. What does that mean? 7 people within 8 hours can build one tiny house or whatever you're building. It doesn't have to be houses. It could be cupcakes or whatever. All right, so we know that if we organize a team of, let's say, 12 people, within 8 hours, we can build one tiny house, $5,000 tiny house. And if we do that, you know, if we make that event happen, and we do that 20 times total, it can be within a month, 20 days, We know $5,000 times 20, you know, make that event happen 20 times, then we're going to get the outcome of $100,000 that we need. Oh, particularly, well, that's our cost, $5,000, so we're going to sell it for $10,000. All right? We know if we do it 20 times, we'll recover the money that we put out, and we'll make $100,000 profit. That can be done within a month. So if you get a receive a bill today of $100,000, you owe property taxes of $100,000, and you got 30 days. Now, typically you got more than 30 days to pay it. But let's say you got a 30-day notice to get it, to pay your rent, or 30 days for any kind of big bill. All right. And this is another math term, logic, because most people, when they get a bill for a large amount of money or any kind of legal notice, they don't think logically at all. They think emotionally. The word logic is a mathematical term. That's why I keep on repeating, you need to get yourself a dictionary of mathematics. There's several online, but I do highly recommend, it doesn't cost that much, Barron's Dictionary of Mathematics, because it contains at least 800 terms that you probably don't know. And once again, just because you got a letter from a debt collector or a law firm or the courthouse or something like that, you don't really have a legal problem. You have a math problem that can probably be solved with third grade mathematics. Addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. Reba, anything you want to add to that?
Well, certainly I had to do the math as well. The young lady at that agency, that housing agency, I knew that they helped people to get a house, the first home purchase and so forth. And mind you, with my situation, I was already dealing with having to purchase the house third party. I didn't have to, but I made the choice. I wanted to keep the house from my mother's estate. So I went through a whole thing with my siblings. You know, they didn't want the house, but, you know, I had to fight for it. So that was stress in itself. And then still mourning my mother. So I think 2 years later, two or 3 years later, I was facing foreclosure. But I would say the logic of what I was able to consider, partly because I was reading too, I'm like, well, I'm only 2 months behind. I'm trying to get some help. That was what they supposedly were going to offer, financial help to catch up. Right. Well, when I walked into that office, Brother L.A., the young lady said, well, why don't you just sell your house? I'm like, so my logic says, well, I have three children. Sell my house and live where? So in the meantime, sell
and
my
see,
house
that,
and I know that now I'm fine.
I'm glad you brought that up, Reba, because that's why I'm so glad you brought it up. That's what I got tired of hearing that answer. You hear from lawyers, you hear from relatives, well-meaning friends. They basically come up with two strategies. Sell it, then like you said, where you gonna live? Okay. And number two, or borrow money. And that's why I'm going back to the fundamental thing of telephone numbers. 0 through 9. You have billions of telephone numbers just in the United States. You have billions of telephone numbers, and they're just made up of from 10 digits, 0 through 9. Anybody, matter of fact, the call-in number for this program is 619-768-2945. The phone number for this live stream podcast doesn't have the digit 0 in it, and it doesn't have the digit 3 in it. 619-768-2945. It's not even So it's the same thing with any kind of financial problem that you have. If you just take a look at the fundamentals of it, that's why we recommend the Dictionary of Mathematics, because that will give you the fundamentals. And you don't even need all the words in it. You just need to learn a handful of words and then start using your imagination and be resourceful on how – that's why I'm giving an example. I mean, I'm using tiny houses because that's what I like to do. But you can do this with cupcakes.
Any
kind of widget that you can think of, Mary Kay products, Amway products. Some people like to fix up cars, but whatever kind of widget that you could do, get that widget and sell it. Make it and sell it. The Amish do it by making shoe fly pies or baked cakes or baking pies or building carports. I mean, some people, you know what, people now, what do they call it, shoe heads, or sneaker heads, really, sneaker heads. You have people out here that earn over $100,000 a month buying and selling sneakers.
Oh, yeah, I've seen
that. It doesn't matter what you make it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter what it is, okay? It's simply get out here. And that way you don't, I mean, once again, I'm tired of those two strategies, sell it or borrow money, when there are millions, if not billions of strategies that you can employ right now. Because, see, once you sell the ancestral house, let me put this in nursery rhyme terms. Once you sell mom, that was a family house, Reba, you were talking about?
Yeah. It was my late mother's
okay.
house, because I wanted to buy my family house that we grew up in. Aunts and uncles would go there. It was always the place that people could go. But my mother's house, I just have two siblings. So, yeah, I wanted to keep at least
right.
one or two
well,
houses.
Well, once you sell mama's house, once you sell mama's house, you've killed the goose that laid the golden eggs, which means the grandchildren or the great-grandchildren, they have to start all over again from zero. So it's just best, like I said, whatever, it don't have to be a house. Make some cupcakes, make pies, whatever your widget might be, make it and sell it. And just watch, repeat, and repent. That's what I'm saying. If you need $100,000, we just, matter of fact, this podcast this morning, I told you how to make $100,000, and I told you how to make $1 million. But not trying to get the whole thing at one time. I didn't mention anything about borrowing money. I didn't tell you to go to the government. I didn't tell you to go to social services. I told you this is something. And if you don't know how to, if you don't know how to do something, you can learn how to do it. For some of you out there that like, you know, some of the ideas we're talking about, you can simply learn how to do it. That's what I'm doing. I'm constantly learning how to build parts of a house or a whole, you know, tiny house. That's my thing. I'm constantly learning how to do that. We had another call here, Reba. Let's go to that real quick. 347, your mic is open.
Hey, L.A., and how all of y'all doing today?
Well, thank you. Welcome.
Fine, Dill. Thanks for calling, man.
You're welcome. I just had, like, some technical difficulties. I had to run to the city, and I just couldn't make it back in time for the beginning of the show, but I'm here now. I know you sent me some paperwork you saw the text I had to resend it because I just couldn't open up to see what it was about.
Yeah, I had to resend that because when I originally sent out that link, which I sent out over the weekend. Every time I update it, the old link is no good, so I had to send it out, you know. But anyway, you made it in.
Yeah, so I know when you used to live over here in New York in the rural areas, and you know how we have the immigrant situation over here. I would like to build some of them tiny houses. I hope we can build some of them tiny houses. Hope we can get something up here running in New York because I hear they are going to start moving them upstate and, you know, places outside the city. If I don't know if you looked on the news, they had one guy had them in their furniture store. He was charging them like $3,000. How much was he charging them a month? Was it like probably about like $1,000 a month, something like that? But the shelter would charge them like almost, I think, like they would charge them a lot. New York City shelter would charge them a lot.
Right.
And this guy was practically charging them about $10 a day or something like that. And he put some of them in his house. He put some of them in his furniture store. But his neighbor got concerned because of the e-bikes. We have a problem over here in New York of the e-bikes. They, you know, they exploding and stuff like that. And so that's why she called to him. And because the shelters over here in New York, it's like a 30-day thing. And then you have to, if you don't find a place in 30 days, you have to move. So I look at all this land that we have in the other places, like the population. You know how we talked a few weeks ago about the population of some parts outside of New York? It doesn't have that much population, and I figure we can build something out here. I know we can do something out here, because you know my situation, Elliot. I have my son, but it's always about the hospital. So I have to make sure he's well taken care of, because it's hard to find, you know, people to help me out and look after him, make sure he go to school, you know. And right now, I just make sure he go to school. He has something to eat. He has a roof over his head. He got the doctor's appointment, and then once that's taken care of, I can do something. But these are the priorities, you know.
Right. Well, you're right in the with the immigrant situation in various sanctuary cities. New York City is just one of them. Chicago's another one of them. Or should I say New York State and the state of Illinois, the other states as well.
Yeah. You could put up some of these tiny solar houses and all the...
Right. There is an opportunity, and let's look at this from a using mathematical terms here. Now, what's the formula for it? Now, based on Lamar Alexander's example. Now, Lamar Alexander said basically what he did, because he's in rural Utah. Now, let's look at the landscape of the United States. Let's look at this as a chess game. 86% of the population of the United States only occupies 3% of the total land mass of the United States. So essentially, 97% of the United States is rural, this country. Cows, chickens, green acres, that type of thing. So there's plenty of land out there, and it's at a reduced price. So for New York State, where the action is, where you can buy affordable land, is in rural New York, which is outside, you know, metropolitan New York City. So, you know, you just look at and what I would do is this. Go, you can look up county, put in any search engine, least populated counties of New York State. Put in any search engine, and if somebody can do that for me right now, I'd appreciate it. Least populated counties of New York State.
Okay.
And that's where the action is. Or any state that you're looking at, least populated counties of that particular state. And that's where you start buying real estate. You start buying land. Now, granted, a lot of these least populated areas, no, they're not going to have a subway like New York City. No, they're probably not going to have a bus line like New York City. No, you're not going to be able to catch a taxi, or in many cases, not even an Uber or Lyft, in a lot of these smaller places. Okay. The more comfort and conveniences that you have of the big city, okay, the more expensive it's going to be to live there. However, the smaller you live, like, for instance, I bought 10 acres of land on eBay. That's one of the things that Lamar Alexander recommended. I bought it for, $2,000, about 7 years ago.
You said excuse me, LA, you said least populated
counties of New York State.
County.
Wait, least populated counties, New York State.
New York State. Now, one thing, so I guess the migrants wouldn't really care where, they wouldn't really care where they're living at, as long as they got some place to go. Would you think so?
It depends on what migrant you're talking. It all depends on, because this is a case-by-case basis. It all depends on what migrant you're talking to, their fifth situation, because, you know, everybody's got a different situation, you know, families and all this, that, or the other. But, okay, all right, hold that for a minute. How many people live in Hamilton County,
okay,
New York?
In Hamilton County, this is what it says. It said Hamilton County is the least populated county in New York with 4,485 residents, a decline of 7%.
All right, wait a minute, all right. So there are 4,000 people that live in Hamilton County, New York. All right, are you on the Wikipedia page of that, Hamilton County, New York? Go to Hamilton County, New York, for Wikipedia. When you get to that, let me know. Hamilton County, Wikipedia. Hamilton County, it makes sure it's Hamilton County, New York. And now this is LA's opinion. The real United States of America, you know, where they talk about the land of the free, the home of the brave, you know, where anybody can make it. The real United States of America is in the rural areas of the United States. It's not in New York City. It's not Chicago. It's not Miami or Orlando, Seattle, L.A. It's not in any of those places because it's super expensive and regulated in those places. The places that will give you a chance to pull yourself up from nothing is in the rural, still in the 2024, is in the rural areas of the United States.
And so in Chicago, in Illinois, we have the least populated. I have Calhoun, Putnam, Hardin,
Gallatin. How many people live in those counties?
Calhoun County's population 5,000, Hardin 4,300, Putnam 6,000.
Okay,
Gallatin.
All right. Which one has the smallest population?
So that's
the ones you just
Hardin
named.
From this list that I see, and this is just Google too, though. So, that's Hardin with 4,300, Hardin County in Illinois.
Okay, all right, yeah, all right. Here's our next step. Okay, we're doing math here, folks. It doesn't sound like, but we're doing math. Reba, look up on Wikipedia, look up whatever the name of that county that you just named. Get the Wikipedia page on that county. Once you get that, let me know.
I got mine already.
Okay, because
I got the Wikipedia.
Okay, now what county do you have for Wikipedia, Daryl?
Hamilton County, New York State.
All right.
It says that.
Well, all right, now,
it says,
scroll down and look for communities in that county.
Okay, communities. Okay, I'm at community. They got Long Lake. They got Spectula.
All right,
they got Wells.
All right, hold it. All right, Wells. Click on Wells. How many people live in Wells?
On Wells, it says N.A. That's what it says. It says not a
All right,
Wells.
That means
the
population is so small.
Yes, it's 500 as of 2020. It's at 531.
That's where the action is. Counties that city towns, what small counties? Look, look for tiny counties with small tiny populations. 500 people. That's where you want to buy land. Where you don't have that much competition. Because if you go to any part of New York City, you're dealing with millions of people. If you go to Chicago, Illinois, you got 3 million people, so it's very competitive, supply and demand. So go those are the places where you go. Reba, have you found that county in Illinois yet?
That's Hardin County, and Wikipedia is more accurate as of April 2024. The, let me see, communities. This county.
Yeah, when you click on your communities, it should be a list of
right.
towns.
Yeah. So they have villages, city, Rossiclare.
Yeah, that all counts.
Right, okay. So you want, let me see.
What?
Rossiclare.
Click on any of them.
Yeah, that's like 03, but let me see something else. Let me see Finneyville. Unincorporated. Okay, so what do you want to know? Let me see, county, state.
Click on any of those towns and name the town and then give me the population if it's listed.
Okay, and it actually is not listed, but I'm going to see if I can search it.
Now, if there's nothing listed, that means the population is probably under 100.
Right.
But find one where you can find a population.
Okay.
What county was that, Reba?
Well, Finneyville, the county, that was Hardin County.
Yeah.
And Finneyville
and what's
community.
What's the county you found?
Finneyville.
Okay. Well, hold on, do they have a town or a village there?
Let me see. Finneyville. Let me see, go back. No, it actually says, yes, probably, actually, because the county is only 3, it's not giving me an amount of people.
Okay, hold on. Give me the name of the county.
That's Hardin, H-A-R-D-I-N, Hardin.
All right, Hardin, Hardin County, County, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Illinois. Okay, let me Wikipedia. Let's see. Okay, Hardin County has a population. Now, this is countywide of 3,649 people, and communities. They have one city. 2 villages and a bunch of unincorporated communities, and they got some precincts. Okay, and then what else? They got some ghost towns, too.
Right.
I'm going to go through all this. Let me, you know, matter of fact, I'm going to go to the bottom of the list. Ghost towns. There's Battery Rock and there's Illinois Furnace. Those are 2 ghost towns. If you want to own your own town, go buy a ghost town. It's already legally platted out. You're going to have to cut some grass, pull some weeds. You're going to have to put some muscle into it. But I'm just saying, there are over 3,800 ghost towns in the United States. That's one way. Matter of fact, immigrants listening, you can have your own town by going to one of these. They're in all 50 states. Go buy yourself a ghost town. You don't have no competition. All right, now, staying in that county, let's see, Rossiclare, Illinois has a population of 980 people. That's small, but it's not small enough. So there's a village in that county called Cave and Rock, Illinois. Cave and Rock, Illinois has 228 people. Haven Rock, Illinois, is what I call, is located within the real United States of America. The real United States of America exists all over the country in most of your 50 states, but in this case, 228 people, it's rural. Go find you some land there that you can probably get on the cheap and build your house.
Yeah.
Granted, there's no subway there. You're not going to, the L train's not going to be in there. The closest Walmart might be an hour away, but you don't have to worry. The roof over your head, you can build a debt-free house and be free that way.
And purchase a car. Pay for that. No car.
Yeah, pay for that.
Calhoun
have no
has
car. Exactly.
222. Well, that was in the 2000 census, but so this is still Wikipedia, interestingly enough. Calhoun County, the village of Richland County, Illinois, has, 222 in 2000. So I'm surprised this is not updated. Let me see. September 2023. Yeah, I'm not on my laptop, so this is, like, not the best typing.
Yeah, I'm on my phone. But it like,
really?
Let's see. Kerber's Ridge, Illinois. They don't even have a population, so it's probably under 100. Then there's Lamb, Illinois.
Yeah.
That's a good number. 164. Look, anything I would say under 1,000 people, that's where the opportunities are. My man, gather up some immigrants and set up township. Just like that Reba, the day that we met, me, you, and Pleasant. We weren't driving around Chicago. We went down to we went to the country, Hopkins Park, and which in Kankakee County. I mean, because in some of the parts, if you remember that day, some of the parts that we were driving in when we got to Pembroke or Hop, they were both the same. We didn't even get cell phone reception.
Right, yeah, we got cut off, yeah.
Yeah, we got cut off. So, but in those are the places that you can buy land. Now, in the places that you just identified in Illinois, the land prices will be easier and much cheaper to buy in those places. But once again, it all depends on your goal objectives, what you want to do. I mean, you might, for instance, if you want to support a lifestyle in Chicago or New York or someplace like that, do what you need to do in these little places. Because like I said, you can set up a community of Ukrainian, well, people that want to start fresh or returning citizens. I mean, pick what kind of village you want to develop if you want to go that route. Like I say, it's all limited to your imagination on what you can do with these little towns. But there's 108,000 little towns. There's 108,000 towns in the United States. That includes the towns that we talked about that we're looking up right now. As well as, because out of 108,000, only 10, and I can go at the door of 11, only 10 or 11 of the towns in the United States have a population of a million or more people.
L.A., you know,
47% of the United States lives in towns that have 5,000 people or less. Yeah, Daryl.
Well, you remember we talked about Syracuse, we talked about the Canadian border, I buy outside and I come back and play in New York. So I saw a piece of land,
right,
and it was like for $5,000. And this guy, he tried to get me to buy something else. He tried to get me to buy something very expensive. And then after a while, they just don't talk to you. I don't know if I need a front man, because once he hear my voice, maybe he didn't want to deal with me because after he hear my voice. So he didn't want me to. It's like sometimes I think when they hear your voice, and they don't want you to get that property. It's like you always got to have a front person. It's like, it seems like you got to have a front person because it's like you know, I look up in my neighborhood, like, you know, they approach the elderly. You know, they target the elderly. And, you know, sometimes the elderly, they don't have anybody to look after them and watch over them and take care of them. And then the elderly, like, you know, sign over something to them, or the elderly put somebody in charge, and then people end up like, you know, like we talk about inheritance jackers, right? Remember it was a book that we talked about, inheritance jackers?
Yeah.
It was a book we talked about years ago. But these people, they were like, they would jack you. They come in your neighborhood. They say, oh, that maybe you could come to it. Has a, you got a broken window. The foundation is falling apart. And this is how they come in and move in the neighborhood. And, you know, they say they change up the neighborhood because the people is like, you know, if they see somebody hanging out on the corner, they see a house hanging out on the corner, they say these people are hanging out. They're not paying their taxes. They're not doing this. They're not doing that. And then all of a sudden they move in. And these are opportunities for a lot of outsiders to come in who don't mean the neighborhood any good.
Yeah, that's true. Well, there are ways to get around that, but we'll cover that another day. But like I said, there are opportunities all over the place, particularly for, matter of fact, Reba, do you need any, you still need a chunk of money up there in Illinois?
Yeah, certainly. I'm back to that point. We want to still do our first tiny mobile solar cabin, we have a fundraiser for May 19th. So we want to do the budget, and this is what I recommend for the single women and children, the single moms, because, you know, that's what my heart is. It may not be foreclosure. It could be losing an apartment or house if they're renting. So just want to
now,
kind of
wait,
make it
how much is how much is that needed for that? How much is needed for that fundraiser, Reba?
Actually, we're pretty much already set up. We're gonna do. Let me see the fundraiser. Okay, so to give you our budget, $2,000 actually.
Okay.
Reba,
hold on. Oh, wait a minute. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Pick up on the back. Love and devotion. In the tracks of lots of motion. It's going to surprise she goes.
Yeah. And that was Misdemeanor by, I'm going to see if any of you in the audience know, 619-768-2945. Who sang that song? They want Soul Train. They want Soul Train. Reba, you know who sang that song?
It sounds like, because it sounds like the Jackson 5, but there were other young groups. So it wasn't the Jackson 5?
No, good guess, but no, not the Jackson 5. Daryl, you know?
I think it was the Forsters of the Silver.
Say that again.
The Forsters.
Say
that
again.
It was the Forsters. The Forsters or the Silvers?
That was, all right, that label, that the song was Misdemeanor, and it was titled, it was the really the only, well, not the only single, but it was the hit single by Foster Silvers. You're right.
Backed up
by two of his sisters, Angie and Pat, and his brother Leon Silvers wrote it. But that's on Soul Train, their performance.
Can you hear me, L.A.?
Yeah, they sounded like the Jacksons, but no, Foster sounded like the Jacksons, Michael. But they Silvers had their own thing.
The young man just actually mentioned the Silvers or the Fosters, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know yet.
Foster Silvers.
Edmund
was the brother Edmund, who's deceased. Edmund was the primary singer for the Silvers, but Foster had the high parts. But that particular song, Edmund was too, his voice was too deep by that end. So Leon, who wrote the song, he's the eldest brother, second oldest sibling. He had Foster sing it, backed up by his two sisters, Angie and Pat. So there were 10 Silvers. 9 of them were performing Silvers. And let's see, Foster was the youngest performing of Silvers, then Angie and Pat, and then, the rest of them were, older siblings and whatnot. So
it was singing since it was maybe 3 years old, 5 years old.
Well, yeah, they got a Groucho Marx thing where their parents had them singing like real young before Foster and Pat and Angie. All before all of them were born, so Leon's still in the business. Leon's produced the Silver, not the Silvers, but the Dynasty, Lakeside, bunch of 8 groups that were hot in the '80s and '90s. Whispers, all and he's you can reach him on Facebook now. Really, he's a fellow musician like you. But he's pretty accessible. But in any event,
hold.
All
you
right,
said
so
you're Reeby.
You're
who,
set for
who
that.
Who are you talking to? You said Reeby. Reeby, what type of movie?
No,
Reba. Reba. Okay.
No, Reba.
Reba.
Reeby is a Jackson. Reba.
Okay.
Is right here.
Okay.
Yeah, I write neo soul. I sing top 40 R&B and so forth. So we will include some. We're gonna do a Motown review for the fundraiser May 19th, Sunday May 19th at the Grand Ballroom Chicago too. So that was a shameless plug.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. So we're gonna share some announcements when you get to.
Well, Reba, now how much was that? You guys, what's the goal to reach that for that fundraiser?
So just the minimum. The facility is the most. So the budget is $2,000. So we don't have to have, because we have different ways to pull money in from the participants of the fundraiser. So we're inviting other groups to come in and so forth. But $2,000 is not a lot. 4 people could come up with that, right? $500
apiece. Right.
Yep. So, yeah, we could do that now. So I do have one young lady. She and I, for the facility itself, we were going to do the $750 apiece. She said another young lady wants to come in. And my only concern is that you got to come with it because you got to have, and during your budget, you got to secure your facility. So even if you hold your facility and you put a deposit down, you don't want to lose your money because the venues require that you 2 weeks or 30 days before the event, scheduled event, you need to have the balance in. So when you do your budget, you want to have, you want to focus on holding your date and then start raising your money for the event. You hold your date and you can actually come up with the balance to pay the full amount. But you do want to at least gather your resources to get a deposit. And so our facility, you know, is we have certain venues that we use. Right now we're looking at, because places like Grand Ballroom are really, really expensive. I'm the small business consultant for some organizations, like the young lady, Noor Muhammad. It's her first event, so I'm actually going, I recommend that they use Grand Ballroom and then give their guests a luxurious experience. So I'm keeping her budget at $2,000, and we're going to get our sponsors in place and so forth. And it's not always just borrowing. So businesses would actually look at supporting you. They, you know, you just promote their business and take it from there. You could go ahead and get some of the help that you need for your event by doing sponsorships. And I know we talked about cupcakes and so forth. That lady, she sold her it's a whipped shea butter, scented whipped shea butter.
Right.
And the small 3 ounce, it's like 2.5 ounces at least, $12. But it smells so good. I'm going to support her anyway. So we encourage, it's a movement called the Black Youth Metropolis. And so the Black Youth Metropolis Enterprise for Entrepreneurship is the not-for-profit, the organization. We're actually in the process of getting the 501c3, but that's who we're doing the fundraiser under. We're going to partner with Noor Muhammad for the Motown review. Let's do Motown and old school. So, of course, my band is going to perform. So, yeah. So, and she was smart enough to say, hey, you know, well, the person actually called her and was wondering, they interrupted our meeting. Like, you know, when you're meeting with people and you're asking them to support you, be it like myself, a consultant, which is actually how I began to partner with her, because I'm like, well, I don't want to spend my time and do the consultation, because I wasn't doing the consultation fee, because I'm like, you got a choice. I can represent you as your consultant, event coordinator, or we could partner, and that would save you even more money. So, but the third person that called in, she's talking to her while we're having our meeting. I was pretty much just trying to make sure that a person knows the layout. So when you talk, go to venues, if you're going to do a fundraiser, or if you just map out your plan the best way you know how, and then you can just reach out to people. Even somebody at a church may know how to do a budget for an event, be it a crisis event or a fundraising event. They would be able to help you with this math. But we're here, Brother L.A. and myself, and the listeners and followers. We
One in a Million, the history of Madam C.J. Walker and her entrepreneurial legacy. Not even her. One in a Million, the history of Madam C.J. Walker.
Anything, hold on. Okay, Daryl, can you hear me? Reba, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can hear you.
Yeah.
Hello.
I can hear you. Can you hear me, Reba?
Oh, yeah. Reba, you went out. Okay. Repeat that, because we didn't hear you.
Well, I was just saying that you can reach out to a local church and let them know your situation. They may not necessarily loan you money. They don't think because it's a church they can loan you money, or, you know, they may take up a collection, but you want to think strategy because you have options. So a one-time donation is one thing if you're in a crisis situation. However, the strategy and the options that Brother L.A., and I are sharing it gives you an opportunity to sustain yourself. That's the difference. So I would say that
yeah,
I'm working
you,
with a young
lady. You need to come up with you need to come up with it. Now, here's another. I mentioned this early in the podcast. A formula, and that's part of the, within the math dictionary. A math formula, and what is the definition? What is a formula in math? A formula is a fact or rule written with mathematical symbols. It usually connects two or more quantities with the equal sign. So once again, going back to the Lamar-Alexander, I'm going to combine Lamar-Alexander. How do you build a tiny house? Let's see. All right. Your outcome is you need $100,000. Okay. So the formula, using the examples that we gave on air today, all right, a formula would be build a $5,000 tiny house that can be retailed for $10,000. That gives you a $5,000 profit. And we know that if you can, I'll use it this way, because we have a formula called 7-8-1. Seven people in 8 hours can build a tiny house. All right. So seven people within 8 hours builds one tiny house for $5,000, but we can sell it for 10, making a $5,000 profit. So if we did that for 20 consecutive days or within 1 month, we build Monday through Friday, we build one tiny house a day, take weekends off. So in the course of a 30-day month, taking the weekends off, that's 8 days, we've got 20 houses built, and then if we sell them online through Facebook Marketplace, eBay, what have you, we sell them online and sell them for $10,000, build for $5,000, sell them for $10,000, then we've got $100,000 within 30 days. And the basic formula is seven people.
No.
Times 8 hours equal one house. Now, you can get more production if you double up on it.
Excuse me, that's just
something simple. You were saying what?
That's my son. He had called me. You know, he's diabetic.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah, he's using too much. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. So, essentially, you if anything... And that's all without you didn't have to borrow any money, you know, no help from the government. Is you need to come up with a formula, because that's all a telephone number is. And I'll end on that. A telephone number is simply a formula on which we can reach you, or you can be reached. A telephone number is made out of essentially 10 digits. All right. That's it. Matter of fact, let me give you some statistics here, which are online. Okay, let's see. Okay. Because we really don't need to complicate anything. All right, in the United States, this is global. In China, you have 1.4 billion people. However, in China, there's 1,610,360,000 telephone numbers, all made up from just those 10 digits, 0 through 9. In the United States, we have over 300,000 people. There are 577,500 528 telephone numbers. And that's not even all his phone numbers. That's not even all cell numbers. Over 380 million telephone numbers made up of just, made from just 10 digits, 0 through 9. Globally, and just, now they're over, according to the United Nations, there's 195 countries. Now, the list that I'm looking up just lists 76 countries. Doesn't even list all the countries. And 76 countries on the planet right now, with over 8 billion people, there's 7,950,000 telephone numbers, all made up of from 10 different digits from 0 to 9. They're just in combinations. So whatever kind of financial problem that you might have right now, evictions, foreclosures, you need a sale, personal finance, retirement, whatever it might be, there is a pre-existing solution. Matter of fact, there is a solution that is right there. You just need to apply these mathematical, you need to find a formula and be resourceful and make it fit for your situation. This
Brother,
is without borrowing any money. Go ahead, Breba.
I just wanted to share the phone number for anyone who wanted information, if they wanted to support the youth organization, and to even buy tickets to the Motown and Old School Review, Motown Review and Old School concert and fundraiser, 773-449-8839. Again, the number is 773-449-8839. You can text for a link to the website or the ticket link.
Thanks. Reba, okay. This is what I got, 773-449. What was the last four?
39.
88-39. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, by the way, people, those phone numbers that I just, the numbers I gave, that's mobile phone numbers. That doesn't include landlines. All right. So there is a strategy that is available to you, strategies that are available to you. You just have to apply your basic fundamental math formulas to it that do not involve borrowing money or selling anything. I mean, selling the roof over your head. I'll put it that way.
Hey, LA, LA. Can I ask Rebe, Chris? Rebe, you was the one who was doing teaching people Spanish or something like that. You was holding them classes years ago, right?
Yeah. What's your name again?
Okay, Daryl. Because I tried to donate to you years ago, and I spoke to I told Ellie, I said I'm trying to get in contact with her, but she's not getting back to me. And you know, because I don't always have money on hand, but at that time I had money on hand, and I just couldn't reach you for anything. And I know you had it was difficult reaching you, but I'm just so, like, I was very upset that I couldn't give you, and I know you needed help years ago.
Yeah, thanks for the consideration.
It just made me feel bad that I couldn't reach you, because I took your number, and I kept on calling you, and there was no way to reach you. You never got back to me.
I appreciate you.
Yeah, but I'm saying it hurt me, because I really wanted to help you.
I get it. And you have a child,
now you
right?
Got
her.
I have a son. He's 11 years old now.
Workshop too. And that could be a fundraiser. I can show you how. Just give me a call if you need to raise funds. I show people how to do a fundraiser with the Spanish, too, where you get a referral bonus, and the organization gives a donation to your family. So, certainly. And thank you for your kind consideration.
So what other hours you'll be available to? Cause maybe it was just a hour. Maybe it was like a timing. Maybe it was bad timing. So maybe that's why.
Oh, no. Everything.
You probably,
Well, no, I did. I had a different phone at the time, but I always make sure, like, I'm announcing my number here. This is a permanent number, so this number's been, I've had it for over 5 years. So we'll do, you can always find me at rebatheteacher.org, Reba La Maestra, Reba the Teacher. My website will pop up, R-E-B-A, the Teacher. Certainly, Reba Spanish. Reba McIntyre might pop up, too. I love her. She's cute. She can sing. But I'm the other Reba. I'm the neo soul Reba. She's a country singer.
So, if you find me. If I call his number, I can leave a message. Can I text it?
Yeah, certainly. You'll get me directly or one of my assistants. So,
right, thank
certainly.
You.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right. Well, what time is it? All right. Oh, we're in overtime. So, that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow.
Hey, Ellie, what we talk about tomorrow?
We're gonna be on this math thing all week, because with real live cases, people that are like the real cases, coming up with real solutions because. This was sparked by, that's what we call it, generational wealth mathematics, because for the last 10 years, all I've heard, and I hate to say it, primarily from black folks, is either sell off the family asset or borrow money against it. And I heard it one too many times last Friday, and I said, that's what I'm saying, there's maybe not be infinite, but there are millions, if not billions, of ways. And that's why, like I said, the two examples I give is telephone numbers. Look how many telephone numbers are made just from 10 digits. And then look how many words, millions of words, if not billions of words, millions of books, songs, that are just in the English language, made from just 26 letters of the alphabet. I mean, it's over 61 million books in the Library of Congress alone, and 470 languages stemming from just 26 letters of our alphabet. And all it is it's a different combination of words. Words like I to God knows, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Go ahead, Daryl.
Like you said, LA, it's a crime. Borrow money on it or sell it. It's a crime. It's a crime that goes on the level of cop a plea, instant gratification. That's how it is. Nobody wants to argue in your defense. They just want you to turn over. They want you to railroad your property. They want you to railroad your ancestor things. Sell it or borrow money.
And a lot of people that do that, like I say, lawyers are not mathematicians. Now, you don't have to be an official mathematician or nothing like that. Like I say, we're talking about third-grade arithmetic. Okay. So, essentially, zero.
Oh, well,
once
yeah.
again,
oh,
it can't
I,
get no simpler than that. Zero to nine.
I relate to that.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, I'm going to close it out because it's almost 1 o'clock. Everybody have a good rest of the day.
All right, that's it.